this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and the views of our guests, and sometimes the views of our callers, if we ask for callers. But we'll ask you to hold your calls for the time being, and we'll ask for them perhaps later in the program if we need them. But right now I want to introduce Melody Cedarstorm, and Melody helps us with us Radio Liberty to stay on the air and bring you the information. And Melody, of course, works with gold and silver, and we like to talk, maybe about once a week on one of our programs about what's happening economically, because I think most people are totally oblivious to what's really going on. If you read the paper, you find that General Motors, the largest corporation in the United States, indeed, probably just about the largest corporation in the world, is having some real financial problems. It certainly is losing money. It has a massive pension debt that is grossly underfunded. And, of course, they juggle the figures around, but that is something like $36 billion that they're underfunded there if you look at it effectively. And where is the money going to come from? I mean, after all, if you're losing money every year and then you have a pension fund that's underfunded, and what's going to happen to the 750,000 pensioners who are depending on what they're going to get from General Motors for their health and for their income for the years that lie ahead. And then, of course, we see what's happening with Delphi. Delphi, the large auto parts company that certainly has gone into bankruptcy. The employees there were getting about $25 an hour, and with benefits, it's about $68 an hour. Delphi has offered them $9 an hour, plus some benefits, but markedly restricted benefits. The United Auto Workers, which represents some 33,000 workers there, has said they're going to get Delphi, they're going to organize, and they're going to cut off their supplies, and they're going to cut off the people buying from them. And you know what's going to happen? Delphi is just going to pick up and move over to China, and those workers are not going to be getting $9 an hour. They're going to be getting $5 an hour working at Burger King or McDonald's. And this is the way our economy is going, because globalism is designed to redistribute the wealth of America and transfer our jobs and transferring our factories and transferring our wealth throughout the rest of the world. And there is a master plan. It's being followed, but the average American doesn't understand. They don't understand why our airlines are in trouble, why companies like Dell has their income, it is down. So many of our manufacturers, if they're based here in the United States, they're losing money. If they're overseas, of course, they're making money. It's just that simple. What happens to our jobs? The jobs are all leaving. And people begin to understand that we're in real trouble financially. Melody, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Dr. Stan. Well,
what's your take on what's going on?
Well, you summed it up quite nicely in the very beginning. It is really a sad situation, and you're absolutely correct. It is all done by design. It's been a master plan. And you spoke briefly about GM, and you mentioned their problems. GM was in the news a lot this week. And what I found interesting was first they came out saying that GM had to restate earnings back in 2001 because they were $400 million overstated, and yet they think it's immaterial that they misquoted $300 to $400 million, and who knows what they've done other years. And then today also the UAW came out and said they will help the automaker cut its massive health care costs, and so a lot of those hourly wage employees will be paying for their health care.
And we're going to have to cut. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Melody Aceta Strom, and we're talking really about what's happening here. And certainly in the past, the auto workers were very, very well paid, lots of benefits. But you see, the reality is that there's no way that the automotive industry can keep paying those salaries and keep paying those benefits. When we are in a situation where we've taken down the tariff barriers, where we've gone into a global market, and the global market is really intent upon destroying America's economy, they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. So Melody was simply pointing out that now the United Auto Workers is saying, well, they're going to have to cooperate with General Motors, because they realize that certainly if General Motors picks up and moves overseas, why, they're going to have an awful lot of people, 750,000 retirees, who are going to lose everything. Of course, they'll just go into bankruptcy and give up their pension funds, give up their health care benefit requirements, and, of course, all the people who are working here will lose their jobs. So they're going to, of course, begin ratcheting down the salaries and ratcheting down the benefits. And this is exactly what you would anticipate, because years ago, General Motors made promises that they knew they couldn't fulfill. And the unions got concessions that they knew, of course, were unrealistic. And here we are, of course, at the end of the time, and the day of reckoning is coming. So pick up the story there, Melody.
You know, with this deal with the GM workers, that means that most will pay a maximum of $752 per year for their family health care coverage. What's really sad and what irritates me is, shortly thereafter, that report came out about 2 o'clock this afternoon, and then by 7 o'clock this evening, GM is going to return to employee discounts for all of their vehicles, except for, I believe, about 3 or 4 of them. And so, therefore, here you have these employees giving up what they thought that could help the company, and then the company turns around and gives all the additional employee discounts to push their inventory that they have. I was also told earlier that GM will only be manufacturing the year 2006 for, I don't know, several months, 5-6 months, because there's so much inventory out there. The only way that GM will be able to survive is by closing plants, by laying off people, and by cutting their models. And we expect that to happen. They will, just as you stated, move their factories overseas and provide jobs for people other than Americans. So, but GM's just not the only company. I mean, it's happening everywhere. And you're right, people don't get it. They've been conditioned. They've been conditioned to believe the truth or the lies.
Hold that. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, Melody was just commenting. Of course, it's very obvious that General Motors is going to have to cut back. She pointed out that the only reason that they're able to move their large inventory, they have a tremendous inventory, they haven't been able to move it. And you remember just a few weeks ago why they said, if you don't get your car now, why, we're no longer going to have the employee discount available to you. And now, apparently, they've just announced they're going to go back to the employee discount. Why? Because they've got to cut the prices to get people to buy. People are not buying their SUVs. They're not buying their big cars. And, of course, they have a lot of big cars there. And people are concerned about the rising price of gasoline. People also have an uneasy feeling that something is seriously wrong in our society. Housing costs, which have been skyrocketing for a long period of time, are just beginning to level off in areas where I live, where houses, I think the average house is something well over $800,000. And believe me, this is ridiculous. But those houses are not selling so well. So I think we're going to begin to see the housing bubble begin to gradually deflate. And remember, this is just artificial assets. They've created this money out of nothing, like the whole monetary system is created, all on expectation. And suddenly now the housing values begin to drop. And with that, the ready money that people have had to go out and invest, or certainly to buy new cars or buy new boats or a second home, that money is not going to be available. And I think that gradually we're going to see, increasing difficulty as far as moving the inventories, not only in automobiles, but in many other things all across this country. And you, if you see what the prices that so many of the products are going for, they're ridiculously low, and the only reason that this is true is because we're importing so much from other countries. In fact, if you look at the inflation figures, they remove food and they remove energy, and they say, gee, there's hardly any inflation. Well, the reason, of course, that there's no inflation is because all the things are coming in from China, and they're keeping those prices low so they can continue expanding their economy. As our economy simply continues to contract, and there's no incidence in all history where a nation has sort of bought itself or spent itself into prosperity, and that's what we're doing. We're spending and spending. We have no savings on the part of the people, and I think we're in for real trouble. What do you think, Melody?
I think we're in for awful trouble. The U.S. electricity rates are 46% higher than a year ago. And when you include that with now these people who have to pay for their health insurance, and their electricity rates are up, and gasoline rates are up, they're being pushed into a corner. They're going to have their mortgages go higher because the majority of them, I believe, 40 to 50% of all mortgages this year have been adjustable rate. So you're going to have that increase, and they haven't saved. We're in a negative savings rate. So people have nowhere to turn. And they have been, again, I turned to the word conditioned into thinking that wealth equals bigger cars, bigger homes, and with no savings. And all their wealth equals debt, and very much like this country.
Well, I think
we have no wealth in this country.
Well, I think people have to know that the trade deficit for this last month was $66 billion. That's 66 B big billion dollars. They're talking, well, last year our trade deficit was about $617 billion, and we're already almost to that level. We're going to far exceed that this year. In other words, this is money that we're spending that we don't have. About 6 or 7% of GDP. We're simply spending money that's not there. It's non-existent. We're having to create it. We're having to borrow it. In fact, if it were not for the fact that foreign banks were coming in here and buying up our bonds and buying, our securities, why this country would be in all, in fact, bankrupt. But we are totally dependent on other countries throughout the world to continue financing our massive deficits. And what's the current administration doing to fight off these massive deficits? Absolutely nothing. It's sort of like putting a Band-Aid, on a gaping wound. They cut $50 billion over the next 20 years, but they're not addressing any of the very real problems that face this country, and that is that we have a massive trade deficit. We have a massive national deficit. They said, well, it's really a lot better than it was last year. Last year was about $417 billion, and this year is only going to be, $313 billion. Ladies and gentlemen, it took 200 years for our national debt to go up to $1 trillion, and we're increasing it at $300 billion, a third of $1 trillion this year, and that doesn't take into account all the money we're going to steal from Social Security, and then all the money we're going to have to put out for Katrina, and then the extra appropriations we're going to have to put out for the Iraqi war. Where's the money going to come from, Melody?
It comes from you and I.
higher
taxes.
But you see, they're actually planning on cutting taxes. What they're doing is simply borrowing the money from future generations so that they don't have to face up to the reality and get everybody mad at them. If you cut taxes, everybody likes you. And then you spend more money, everybody likes you. And spending more money and cutting taxes is a sure recipe for disaster. And this is what nobody really wants to face up to. We have, obligations somewhere between $50 and $70 trillion as far as what we promised to give to the people in the way of health care benefits and pensions, and there's no money to pay it. This whole thing, House of Cards, is going to come down one of these days. And the average individual doesn't understand that I personally believe there's an organized plan to destroy our economy and to do with our country what we did to Russia in the 1990s when we simply destroyed the value of the currency, and what happened to Argentina a few years ago. And you know what's really so interesting is that if you go to India today, the people over there are saving. They're saving money and they're buying gold. If you go into China today, the people are saving money and they're buying gold. And here in America, why, people really believe that fiat money, these paper bills that they can run off a billion or two or $3 billion anytime they want to, or $100 billion, they think that's real money. The Chinese are a lot smarter. The Indians are a lot smarter than most Americans.
Yes, they are. And they become educated over here, and then they go back there for our jobs. But one day I believe the Americans will start realizing that their money is buying less and less, and their dollar bills will no longer pay their bills, and they will eventually shift their wealth into a currency that is rising, and that currency will be gold. I do believe they will, the U.S. dollar, as it now is the world's reserve currency, that will be devalued, and it will be replaced with a trade currency, a universal trade currency, and personally I believe that will be gold. And so I believe that the rest of the world truly knows the value of gold, except the people here in the United States. The people here in the United States have been, they don't know what reality is. They've been put under this illusion, and when you think about it, it's truly, I hate to use the word amazing and incredible, but it's just mind-boggling to believe that they have been able to control and have this as a master plan, and they are executing it so extremely well. They use the items that happen, the different things that happen in this country, and they'll turn it to use for their furtherment of their agenda. And I believe that they've suppressed gold, but I think now is the time to buy it. Just like I heard someone say not too long ago, you should be lucky. You should be pleased that they've been suppressing the price of gold, because you should be in there buying it at this low price. It's like the elitists are giving it away at these low prices, because ultimately gold will rise. And when we look at the trillions of dollars that this country is in debt, and when we have to equalize gold to the currencies of the world, it will rise significantly. There's been estimates gold rising to 800 to 1500 to 3000. I've even seen 10,000. So certainly now gold is the bottom rung of the ladder. So it is a great time to get in and purchase gold. Take control of your finances.
Well, I think what's interesting, you have to understand why these central banks keep the price of gold down. Because they want you to deal in paper money. They don't want you to deal in something that has real and inherent value. Now, it's certainly the central banks know that gold has value, because every central bank in the world has gold. Why do they have it? Because they know it has inherent value. They just want to convince the American people that it is of no value, and they then artificially have been manipulating the price for a long period of time. And you know, we usually start our programs by saying reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I think people in other countries, you know, really have much more freedom of thought and much more understanding of what money is. Money is not simply a piece of paper or a bank entry, or something that is simply can be transferred back and forth very readily simply by punching a computer key. Money is something of inherent value. It has been since the beginning of recorded time. And what has really happened here in the United States is they have convinced the American people that a fiat money system works, because look at the prosperity it has created, and that's absolutely right. I mean, we have had amazing prosperity here based upon a totally fallacious money system, sort of like monopoly money. As long as you can convince the people it's of value, that's fine, but what happens when we begin to get into financial problems? What happens when there really aren't any jobs, because all of our jobs have been shifted overseas? What happens when other countries stop financing our massive deficits? And I think that other people throughout the world are beginning to prepare themselves for a real financial contraction. How will you break the back of the independence of the American people? Well, you destroy the value of their currency. You replace it with a cashless society. And I really believe that that's exactly what is being planned by the people working behind the scenes. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Melody Cedarstrom. And basically, we've been talking about what's happening to the precious metals, what's actually happening to silver. So both gold and silver were up here a couple of weeks ago, shortly after Katrina, and now they've really sort of fallen back. Why is that?
Well, actually, there's gaining momentum. We had a great week in gold today. We had a great week in gold, I should say. We had an increase of 2.2% this week. It was a gain of $10. Silver was up 20 cents for the week, and that's 2.6%.
Really, what did it close at today?
It closed at 776, silver did.
Okay, well, that just happens when I don't check it out for a day. Why, you lose all track of what's going on. That is a big move.
Well, you know, silver is very volatile. And so that's one thing. Tomorrow it could correct back downward, and it could go back up. It's been a while since we've been over the $8 mark for silver, but a lot of things are happening. A lot of predictions. Gold will be over $500 by the end of the year, and silver, I'm sure, will make some impressive gains. Platinum and palladium, I believe, is actually the story. It's amazing what they've done for this week. Platinum is up to, 975, a gain of 5.6%. And palladium started the week at 224 to finish at 251, a gain of 12%. And so the platinum and palladium have just been extremely, they've done extremely well this week, so.
Well, you know, I think one of the most interesting things is that in the face of everything going on in the world today, the dollar has kept rising. It really doesn't make any sense any more than the fact that the long-term interest rates are going down. And yet, of course, these things are happening in total violation of all the laws of economics, as if the whole thing is being manipulated by some hidden hand.
Well, it is being manipulated, and because everything is out of balance. Just as you said, nothing makes sense. There's no reason behind anything. And I guess that's truly what an illusion is. And, they have made people believe that the stock market is the only place that you should be, that you will become wealthy. But these elitists have bled the people of this country dry. The elitists, I believe, get a lot of their funding from Wall Street. So they need to have everybody in the stock market. They've had to condition the people into believing that that's where their money should be. And people need to pull away from that and take control of your own portfolios, your own investments, and not go along for the ride. And it's a herd mentality that's happening in Wall Street, but that's where they want you there. Beginning 2007, the baby boomers will begin to retire. And do you really believe that they're going to allow the baby boomers to have their money? Of course not. Their money is going to be stripped from them. They'll get some of it, but a far cry from what these baby boomers are anticipating. And again, it's all by design. It's not coincidental that we're having problems with pension funds. It's all by design. Why jobs are leaving this country. It's all by design that we're having the problems that we're having. The next generation is going to be stripped of their funds by a lowering of the living of our standards.
And I think that's really so important for people to understand. There is a plan to redistribute the wealth of the American people, and when we get back, we'll tell you how you can read it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Melody was just talking about the lowering of the living standards here in America, and I really think it's so important, and those of you who listen to Radio Liberty regularly know that we often refer to the master plan for the world. It's available on the Internet. It's called The Earth Charter. And if you haven't read it, you really need to. It's all sort of mixed up talking about spirituality and righteousness and all these wonderful utopian ideas put forward by that great humanitarian, Mikhail Gorbachev, who was the dictator of Russia during part of the Afghan War, when they were slaughtering the women and children in Afghanistan and dropping little bombs that looked like toys, so the kids would pick them up and blow off their hands and feet. Mikhail Gorbachev, of course, has never been tried as a war criminal. He's over here in the United States, and everybody, of course, when he puts on the meetings, all the leaders of our country go there, State of the World Forum meetings, but he and two billionaires have written something called the Earth Charter. That is Marie Strong and Stephen Rockefeller, the son of Nelson Rockefeller. So if you read the Earth Charter, and if you don't have a copy, we'll be glad to send you one. If you call us at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. The Earth Charter is the Mein Kampf of the world fascist movement. The Earth Charter is being kept in the Ark of Hope. It is a Luciferian counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. And in the Earth Charter, if you read it, point 10A talks about redistribution of wealth within nations. Well, that's, of course, communism. And then redistribution of wealth between nations. And that's how you will impoverish the American people. Because, after all, if you redistribute the wealth of the people in Bolivia, you're not going to accomplish very much. But if you redistribute the wealth of the American people, why, of course, then we can at least theoretically raise the living standards of other people throughout the world as we lower the living standards of the American people. And that is the master plan, but they can't tell the American people that. And so they pretend that all these things are happening. Oh, shucks, we have no idea why all of our jobs are leaving and why all of our factories are leaving. And why the cost of natural gas and oil and electricity are going up, it's all part of a plan. It's a scam. The whole idea of deregulating electricity. We're sold to the American people, at least here on the West Coast, as a means of lowering the cost of electricity. Actually, it was designed to raise the cost of electricity, but they couldn't tell the people that. And if you haven't seen the 14th set of the talk we have or the syllabus we have on the electricity scam, it's well worthwhile getting and studying to see how they manipulated us to justify raising the cost of electricity. And then the price of natural gas is going up. And this is intentional. How have they managed to get this scam? Well, first of all, we were awash in natural gas. It was $3 per million BTUs, really up until the beginning of the 2000s. I mean, there was so much natural gas, they didn't know what to do with it. And then, of course, they insisted that all the new electric generating plants began to burn massive amounts of natural gas. They couldn't then burn oil, they couldn't burn other things. We can't have nuclear energy, we've got to burn natural gas. And that's how they did away with the supplies, to create an artificial shortage, to run up the price from $3 to $12 to $14 a million BTUs. They know exactly what they're doing, and an awful lot of people are going to have real problems financially. Are you hearing this from people in your area, Miller? Do you live back in the cold area, don't you?
Yes, I do. I'm in central Pennsylvania.
Oh, boy.
But we've had a very mild winter so far. We're in fall, I should say, because we're not in winter yet. But our fall has been very mild. We've had a little snow, a little flurry, but for the most part, I'd say, we probably had a freeze just once or twice, so it's been very nice, and I'm not complaining. So, but yes, there's big concerns that the heating oil for this year, it's certainly going to hurt a lot of people.
And I think people have to understand that there is a massive strategic heating oil reserve with millions mm-hmm. of barrels of oil in it. And, of course, this was set aside by Congress, so we couldn't get into a squeeze so that the price could not be artificially elevated. So we are in a squeeze situation. The president has the right to release that heating oil from the strategic reserve, and you'd never guess what George Bush has said. I'm not going to release any. Why isn't he? Because he's going to drive the price up. You know, and, of course, they know exactly what they're doing. In fact, there's been some of the congressmen are pleading with him to release the oil, but that isn't the agenda. We are going to lower the living standards. You're going to have to put on 3 sweaters this winter, and let's just pray that we will have a mild winter back there, because otherwise an awful lot of our people are going to be in real trouble. And the people who are manipulating this whole thing know exactly what they're doing. They've raised the prices of oil and natural gas, as they did by creating artificial shortages. And here we need oil, and well, but they blocked drilling up in Anwar. Why? You make a lot more money than there's a shortage and where there's a surplus. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom, and we're talking really about what's happening in finances. It's so interesting. They call the leaders of the oil industry, the ExxonMobil, Chevron, Conoco, Royal Dutch, and British Petroleum. They got the meet leaders of the 5 largest oil companies to Washington, D.C. to explain why they're going to make $100 billion profit this year. And the head of ExxonMobil said, you should thank us. I mean, we did a wonderful thing for you by raising the price of gasoline, because if we hadn't raised the price of gasoline, people would have used too much gasoline, and there would have been a shortage, and you'd have long lines of gasoline after what happened down in the Gulf. So we really did you a favor by jacking up the price when there was no real shortage, because we kept you from having long lines of gasoline. And the senators all nodded in unison, because, of course, they're all, most of them are getting large stipends from the oil companies to keep them in office. Didn't you think that was just amazing?
Oh, you know what? Nothing surprises me anymore. But, you know, it was all lip service. You know, the politicians are up there feeling that they're, you know, they have to show their constituents that they're doing something. And, of course, those constituents just believe that they're doing something, and it's sort of like they just pat each other on the back, and no one really cares what anybody says. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're all a bunch of crooks in Washington. There's one or two that's decent and upstanding, but you're right. They all get paid from the various lobbyists and groups and corporations, and I mean, it's just a joke anymore, and it's sad that it's truly sad that it has come to that. But it will continue, because no one has. I mean, how many people that are listening voted this week in their local communities, in their communities? How many people went out and voted? Probably not very many. And that's sad. And although many of us will believe that, you know, the elections are fixed, that is all we have to voice our opinion. And if every one of us went out there and voted, perhaps at least we might make a little dent. Now, that might be some cheerleading, and maybe I don't even believe that myself, but you have to try. You have to go out and vote. And I push everyone. I tell everyone, you have to vote. That's the only way it's the only way we can make a difference.
Okay,
and it really only gives us the right to complain if we voted.
All right, and here in California, they had a 42% turnout for probably one of the most important elections we've ever had. We'll be back in just a moment here with Melody. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Melody. In just a moment, I want to get Melody to basically to tell you a little bit about herself. But I just wanted to comment, when the oil company executives from the five major companies were taken back to Washington, D.C. to testify before the United States Senate, they weren't asked to be sworn in. In other words, ordinarily, when they brought the tobacco company executives, they were sworn in. They lied, of course. They perjured themselves under oath. But when the oil company's executives were called, they weren't asked to give sworn testimony. In other words, they got special treatment. Or, as Jay Leno said so well, when the oil company's executives there, senators paid them deference, because they knew who owned the Capitol building. So, of course, he was suggesting that maybe the oil companies had a lot more influence than they do, and I think they're absolutely right. Well, Melody, why don't you give your web page and your telephone number so people would know how they could get in touch with you if you'd like to know a little bit more about your views on what's going on today.
Okay, my website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And if you would like to email me, you can do so at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And our phone number is 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I think we'll probably open up the lines here if anybody would like to call in and ask Melody some questions. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we live in, I believe, very, very uncertain times. I think most people are living in a fool's paradise. I'm really very concerned that America is on the precipice of some very real financial problems. And you don't have to take my word for it. Read Paul Volcker's article in the Washington Post on the 10th of April. Read, certainly, the recent speech by Alan Greenspan, I think it was on the 3rd of November before the Joint Economic Committee there of the Congress, and he talks, you know, of course, in Greenspeak, but if you get to the very end of what he said, and he said he just wanted to comment about the deficit, and then he went on to say if we don't get this under control, there are going to be serious economic consequences of spending a lot of money we don't have. Did you read that speech?
No, I haven't had a chance to, no.
Go ahead.
No, I'm finished. I haven't had a chance to.
Well, it's really a very, very significant speech, and it's probably the last speech that Alan Greenspan will give before Congress, before his term expires in January. And I would just say that probably things will be pretty good until January, and then hang on to your hat.
Well, Bernanke's just a puppet also, but so it'll be interesting to see. I think he'll follow Greenspan's policy for a while, and then I think he'll start lowering rates a little bit, you know, later in the year, springtime. But it will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the markets absorb the change.
Well, you see, the thing is that when you have inflation, you have to contract the money supply, you have to raise the interest rates to slow down inflation. What have they been doing? Why, they've been raising the interest rates, and they've been flooding the market with money, which does exactly the opposite from what raising interest rates does. What they're doing today is simply preserving the economic boom and keeping it falling apart, but with disastrous consequences for the future. And Alan Greenspan is a very, very smart man. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. And I think he's laying the foundation for a total collapse of our monetary system. There is no possible justification for raising interest rates to fight inflation and then massively expanding the monetary supply. Would you agree with that, Melody?
I agree with it 100%. I believe Greenspan pretty much sold his soul when he became the Fed chairman. And for so many years, and because I believe you mentioned in one of the earlier programs, he was a firm believer in a currency backed by gold, and so I believe he basically sold his soul, and he did what he had to do, and basically he became one of the most powerful men in the world as he led our country down the destructive path that he has, and there's only one way that you can protect yourself from that path that he has put us on, and that is by purchasing gold and silver-related assets.
Well, you know, there's one of the most famous essays. It's written back in 1965, and any of our listeners can pick it up on the Internet. It's Alan Greenspan, essay 1965, a gold-backed currency, something like that, on Google. And in that article, Alan Greenspan said that there is a conspiracy, in effect, against gold. And the welfare state don't want you to have any means by which you can preserve your wealth. And the reason that they have come out against gold is because they don't want you to have a means of protecting your life savings. And if there was another method of protecting your savings, why, they would make that illegal as well. And of course, he was speaking at the time when it was illegal for Americans, or just for Americans that had only recently been able to actually even own gold coins. So I guess it was still illegal for Americans to own gold coins in 1965. Well, recently, Ron Paul had actually confronted Alan Greenspan at a meeting, and I confirmed this by talking to Alan, to Congressman Ron Paul's press secretary. And apparently Ron Paul had gone up to Alan Greenspan and said, well, Mr. Greenspan, in view of your monetary policies that you're bringing into this country and you've supervised for the last 16 or 18 years, you certainly would want then to disavow that essay you wrote back in 1965 on the importance of a gold-backed currency. And according to the press secretary, which is what telling what Ron Paul had told him, Alan Greenspan said, I've recently reread that essay, and I wouldn't change one word of it. Which means that Alan Greenspan knows that everything he has done is wrong and is going to lead eventually to the collapse of our economy. I think he knows exactly what he's doing.
Sure he does. So does a lot of people, except for the people out there that have been brainwashed, so to speak. And unfortunately, they will not be able to protect themselves because they don't understand the value of what gold and silver-related assets can do to protect your purchasing power when we have the difficulties that we'll be facing with the devaluation of the dollar and people losing their wealth.
And I think you have to realize that when you have a solid currency, when you have a currency with real value, maybe it's still a fiat money system, but it's on a sound financial basis, and the system works fine as long as you have restraint on the part of the people who control the central bank. And that's why we've had the artificial prosperity we had for such a long period of time. But once that restraint is gone, of course, then you get into a situation where everything can be destroyed, so you have to be in the material things. When, as it was in 1980, after Paul Volcker had done the right thing and restabilized our economy by raising the interest rates to 22%, and so starting in 1981, 1982, we began moving into the greatest stock market surge and economic surge that any country has ever seen through all time. And we're at the very height of that at the present time. We had a little backing off here in the early, about 4 or 5 years ago, but now we're right back up almost where we were before. But it's all artificial. And the day of reckoning is coming. And if you read Paul Volcker's article on the 10th of April of this year in the Washington Post, he says sooner or later, whether with a bang or a whimper, but this whole thing is going to come down. And I fear there's going to be a financial implosion. So if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, a comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But remember, our airlines are in trouble. Our automotive industries are in trouble. Certainly, all of our electronic industries are moving over to China where they can produce ever so much cheaper. And the only reason they're making a profit at all is, of course, they're making a profit using slave labor wages over in foreign countries. And, of course, people are swarming into this country. The latest count of illegal aliens, at least the figure I had, was given to me by somebody who heard a federal official speaking a few weeks ago, in San Francisco, was about 20 million illegal aliens in the United States. What do you think is going to happen when they don't have any jobs? Are they going to react like the Muslims are over in Paris and surrounding areas? Almost 200 cities in France have had, you know, mobs out in the streets burning cars. 15,000 cars have been burned. Buildings have been burned. Governments' buildings have been burned. Police stations have been burned. And this was all, of course, certainly carefully managed. They did not do anything that they should have done. You see, if they'd moved in immediately and put a curfew on, why, they could have stopped the whole situation. They waited for 12 days to let it get out of hand. And you have to ask yourself, why would they do that? Well, I will tell you why they would do that. Because how else would they be able to justify implementing a dictatorial control? It has been said that when liberty leads to a loss of order, then the demand for order will lead to a loss of liberty. And then when liberty leads to a loss of order, then the demand for order will lead to a loss of liberty. And that's exactly why the French government waited 12 days before they put on a curfew, before they began moving in and moving in with reserve police to stop the violence there. And I fear we're going to see the same thing here. I don't know whether it'll be 6 months or 2 or 3 years, but believe me, when there are no jobs available for all the illegal aliens we have in this country, how do you think they're going to react?
They're going to react pretty much the same way. And we have so many illegal aliens, but we also have so many foreigners that are here that will pretty much, again, take the jobs with the less wages, just like the illegal aliens, and they will respond. I believe they want to stay here. I saw a headline on an article today, and it was interesting. I didn't have a chance to read it, so perhaps I should bring it up until I read the article. But where those riots were happening, it was a lot of those the countries that did not support the Iraqi war. And I thought that was an interesting correlation to those riots. I believe it was France and two of the other countries. I believe it was Germany and another one.
I think some in Denmark as well.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Ken, who's calling here from near Death Valley. Never heard of it. City you're from. Hi, Ken. How are you doing?
Yeah. I got a question for your guest. Gold, we know, has been confiscated in the past, Roosevelt and such. I was curious what your guest's opinion is of the various electronic gold transfer systems on the Internet, such as e-gold, or in foreign countries like Pekinex, and there's actually several on the Internet.
Okay. I don't agree with any of them, and I don't believe that's a way to avoid any type of future confiscation, if that's what they do. With this electronic trading, you don't know who these people are. There's no regulations. You know, a lot of these accounts say they store gold, and you can buy bullion at the low price or these pools. All you get is a statement. So, I don't agree with them. I believe you need to take actual possession of your gold. That will protect you. And you don't know. There's thousands of different accounts and people. You don't see them. You don't know where they're at. I can't imagine putting funds to where there is such a mystery behind the accounting procedures on these different firms and groups.
Ken, have you been following what's going on with Repco, this large international corporation that now is, of course, declared bankruptcy? But there's a man named Jimmy Rogers, certainly one of the better-known investors. He's really sort of one of these whiz kids. And he invested $250 million with this company, and they were supposed to keep this in separate account and supposed to invest it specifically for him. And they just put the money in with the rest of it, and they just the money's all gone. $250 million of his money and his investors' money, and they have no comeback on it. The company say, gee, sorry, it's all gone now. And, when you're dealing with these international corporations, many times they have very close relationship with people in government, and the money just mysteriously disappears, and you can be impoverished. I certainly think that this is an excellent time to make a small fortune out of a large fortune, and I would be very, very careful of what you do at the present time.
Well, but based on what we learned from Jekyll Island, is there any integrity in the Federal Reserve System?
Absolutely not.
Is there any integrity in NASD or SEC?
I'm sorry.
National Association of Security Dealers or Securities Exchange Commission?
Absolutely not.
Well,
we got real problems. You're going to have to look after yourself, and you're not going to be able to trust any of these people who want to invest your money for you. Do not let them do it. Believe me, I'm probably a lot older than you are, and I've made the mistake many times. Don't trust anybody, except maybe your wife.
Okay.
Melody, how would you respond to that?
Well, I agree. Wall Street's full of crooks, and you really can't trust anyone out there. I mean, they do everything that they can for them to make money. And what you need to do is collect gold and silver assets, take control of your finances. See, I believe when the systems purge, there will be stages. There will be different times in which you can benefit from different investments. But if you want a safe, secure investment, You must take possession of your gold and silver assets. Wait for the times to appear to where you can reinvest that and go into something else. We're so impatient. We're so impatient that we want that lottery. We want that one investment to pay off, and we all become instant millionaires. Well, if you own gold and silver, you will become, it will reward you. But you have to be patient, and you have to wait to see how things unfold. As I said, there will be stages, there will be times to sell your gold, to reinvest, but we have to wait. Now is the time to be safe. You want a safe investment, because there isn't one item, not one investment out there that gives you the security as gold does.
And I would simply point out that apparently Warren Buffett feels very much the same. He's shorting the American dollar, and he's still holding, I don't know how many, 100 million ounces of silver, which he bought some time ago because he doesn't trust the currency. And we know that many of the other large investors, we're talking about Bill Gates and George Soros, are getting into this sort of thing as well. So these people know what's going to happen. It's just that the average individual doesn't know what's going to happen. And you may never make a lot of money, but at least you'll preserve what you have. But if you play the game the way everybody else does, why, most people are going to lose.
The only thing that concerns me on gold is just looking at the world precious metals market, and from what I've been told, 10 men sit down in a paneled room in London twice a day and determine the price of gold. And all those 10 men are obviously friends of the whole central banking community.
Well, you know, it used to be like that. It used to be that the Rothschilds actually twice a day sat down in their London office and determined the price of gold. They don't do that anymore. They stopped doing it. And AIG got out of fixing the silver price, so they know something big is going to happen. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, we've got just a couple of minutes more. Ken, certainly the whole market is manipulated, but they can only do it so long. Indians are buying gold. The people in India are buying massive amounts. Between China and India, they're buying up 80% of all the gold that's being bought up today. And they cannot control it when the idea catches hold throughout the world. So we're going to have to wait to see what happens. Certainly we know that the Arabs are buying gold in large amounts because they don't trust the paper currency. Any thoughts on that, Melody?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said that simply that the Indians and the Chinese are buying gold. And what? The Arabs are buying gold, too. And we hear stories that the Arabs are beginning to stock up on gold because they don't trust the American currency.
Absolutely. And once they find something better to buy, they will be moving their currency into gold. The dollars that they have, they will be dumping them and buying gold. And if you buy the right product at the right price, it will meet or exceed your investment expectation. When our paper assets, our dollars, you know, are truly not worth the paper that they are written on. So it's now is the time. Gold is still very cheap to the standards of everything else in the investment world. And
okay, fine. Well, Ken, if you don't think it's a good investment, I certainly wouldn't invest in it. But I really believe it is, and I wouldn't, if I didn't, I wouldn't ask Melody to come on with us.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Ken.
Bye-bye. Okay, Melody, well, you've got about a minute and a half to wrap up the program.
Well, if anyone is interested in calling me, I have some great information we can send out. You can call me at 1-800-375-4188. My website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. I'd also like to make a comment that physical ownership of gold, again, carries the least amount of risk with the greatest profit potential of any currently available investment. So now is the time to purchase it while it's still reasonable. We do things a little bit different here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We take the old-fashioned way. I believe that each customer deserves my personal attention. And it is so important, as I stated before, to buy the right product at the right price. And we take our customers, our investors, and we include you in the decision. We just don't sell one coin fits all. We educate you as far as the different products that's available. and you become a very important part in your own decision in purchasing gold and silver assets.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much, Melody. Good night. God bless.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this is me. Well, I think it's important that people begin looking and seeing what's really going on in the world, and of course, what the implications are of where we are financially. If you'd like to get a copy of the Earth Charter we talked about earlier, it is the Mein Kampf, what's going on in the world. It's written by three of the richest men and most powerful men in the world, Mikhail Gorbachev, Marie Strong, Stephen Rockefeller. And, of course, point 10A points out, as you've heard me say before, of the Earth Charter, redistribute wealth within nations and between nations. They're talking about your wealth. If you'd like a free copy of the Earth Charter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And remember what Marie Strong and Mikhail Gorbachev said. This is the new Ten Commandments for the world. So when you begin to understand that there is a spiritual implication to what they're talking about, that they have put this document, the original scrolls upon which it was written, they're today encompassed within the Ark of Hope, which I believe is the Luciferian counterpart, or counterfeit of the Ark of the Covenant. Because behind everything that's going on, there are powerful, and I believe sinister, spirits and forces that are moving us away from freedom, are intent upon destroying the sovereignty of the United States and bringing about a one-world government and a new world religion. So our plea to you is become informed. And if you'd like to go to our website at www.radioliberty.com, that's www.radioliberty.com. You certainly can listen to our radio programs there on the Internet, directly or indirectly, 5 hours a day. You can listen to our shortwave programs, and the shortwave frequencies are posted there. You can pull down our newsletters, and we invite you to read those. And then we do want to mention that we are having a conference right here in the Monterey Bay area where I live on the 19th of November. Of course, some people will be hearing this program on a delayed broadcast, but those who are hearing it tonight, if you'd like to know more about what's really going on in the world, we do hope many of you will seriously consider coming to our conference. That's the 19th of November. Now, we need to know if you're going to be there so that we can actually know how many people will be there for lunch, because lunch will be served. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. This is the last night we'll be announcing it. Now, we have to have all the reservations in by tomorrow. We have a good crowd coming. We're bringing speakers in from Illinois, from Northern California, several of them. And, of course, I'll be talking, too, about, well, some what I think are very, very important issues that will help you better understand what's going on. So, again, that's the 19th of November. That's a week from tomorrow on a Saturday all day long. Hope you can make it. And then, of course, we ask you to recognize the fact that there really are forces here, spirits of forces in the world. Certainly, there are many people who have been able to access these. We're told in the Holy Scriptures to avoid those who are sorcerers and mediums and diviners. But there really are people who have accessed this other world, this other dimension, and some of these, unfortunately, are working at the highest levels of our government today. Certainly, if you'd like to get the material on our website about the occult hierarchy that rules the world, that's my May and June newsletter. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, but please don't call in unless we specifically ask for calls. We have with us on the line Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and of course we had Joel Skousen, Andrew's dad, for many years, and Joel is traveling at the present time, but we certainly get every week from him as he travels around the world, the World Affairs Brief, which is a weekly email update on what's going on. And then of course the Andrew and his brother Derek and their research crew actually have a website, worldaffairsbrief.com, and you'll be fascinated by the material that's there. So to discuss what's really going on in the world, and believe me, there are so many things going on. We just got over Hurricane Katrina, and then of course we see the increase of the tempo of the war in Iraq, and then we see certainly the riots taking place over in France and in Denmark, and then of course the bombing in Jordan. It's almost as if tremendous things are taking place. Well, right now, of course, let's go to Andrew Skousen. Hi, Andrew. How are you tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm doing just fine.
Well, we live in exciting times, don't we?
Boy, I'll say it's rather exhilarating to be in all this commotion, albeit how scary it is sometimes.
Well, at least we have an idea what's happening. Of course, we live in a utopian world here. We haven't been touched by the violence that is plaguing the people in Israel, and the people violence that's plaguing the people in Palestine and in Iraq, and now in Jordan, and certainly most recently in Europe. But I fear very much that if we continue our current policies, why things are going to change. But you pick up the story and bring us abreast of what's going on.
Certainly, Dr. Stan. I'd like to focus a lot of our time tonight on the situation that has recently happened in France, and talk about some of the various lessons that we can learn from it here in the United States. Just to recap, the past 2 weeks, there has been almost nonstop immigrant violence by angry African hoodlums in France. And many of these are gangs of Muslim youth who live in the French ghettos in the major cities, and in the past 2 weeks they've been emerging and using what is a very cheap and very effective weapon of terror, which is the gasoline petrol bomb with the Molotov cocktail. For those of you who haven't seen the news reports or heard about these, it's a very effective and easy thing. You simply take a glass bottle, like a beer bottle, fill it with gasoline and stuff a rag in the mouth, and then with a lighter it becomes an instant bomb, which is then thrown against objects which are flammable, and it crashes and breaks and ignites the entire thing. It's quite a dangerous thing, and it's very interesting to see what effect that has had in France and what the repercussions are.
All right, fine. We'll talk about this when we get back. But we do know that thousands and thousands of cars have been burned over there. We do know that buildings have been burned, that the churches and synagogues have been burned. And this is really an effort to incite a revolution in France. We have not seen unrest in France like this since the time of the Secret War, the time of when they had the war with Algiers, and of course the effort, of course, of the French government was going to betray Algiers, and there were people who tried to stop it, but they were unsuccessful. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, pick up the story there, Andrew.
All right. Well, we were talking about the the French mini revolutionaries that are caught havoc in parts of France, or have caused havoc during the past 2 weeks by torching a great number of cars. This is actually a very effective technique. It demoralizes people. The cars are of course very important part of everyone's lives, but they're vulnerable because they're parked at night and often in open spaces, and gangs of these hoodlums with these Molotov cocktails can parade the streets at night in gangs and simply torch and light cars at will. They've been using masks to try to hide their identities, and most of the French authorities, at the beginning at least, tried to pass this off as merely, well, this is just an aspect of the social culture that we have, and we just need to implement a few more social cures to respond to this reaction of social injustice. And there was quite a bit of justification for a little bit of the actions of these youth by the soft liberal minded politicians that are in power in France. And until the situation escalated, they didn't realize exactly what a problem they had on their hands.
Well, I mean, you're talking about, certainly in many of the ghetto areas, 30% of the youth just don't have any jobs. In fact, the overall, certainly unemployment in France, I think, is about 10%, 20% for Muslims, and 30 to 40% for the youth. So even young people that really wanted a job couldn't get them, partly because they were not trained and partly because they were Muslim and there was prejudice against them. So pick up the story there.
No, it's true. And this whole situation that's occurring in France is actually a direct result of the immigration policies that France has had in effect. You see, there's a justification to allow a large number of immigration into a country because of the cheap labor that they provide, and there's been a growing movement of concerned citizens in almost every wealthy country throughout the world to try to
hold that right there for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Andrew has been talking about the problem that they have in France and really many of the countries of Europe, with a growing number of immigrants coming in from the other countries, and many times encouraged to come in because they were a source of cheap labor. They would take the jobs that other people didn't want to, and then of course you had your socialist state, and why should people work when they can get a paycheck from the government? And that's been the attitude of the people in France and Germany and so many other countries, and let the Muslims work, and we'll just sort of get our paycheck and take our long vacation and live it up, but then of course you begin social unrest, and especially as the economy begins to contract and these people don't have jobs, then you begin to get the social unrest. And then Andrew was saying that there are many people certainly in many of the European countries who have been trying to do something about the unbridled immigration into their countries, because they realized that this was going to be a festering sore and one day it was going to have explosive consequences. So you pick up the story, Andrew.
That's a very interesting point you make, Pakistan. In fact, there is a not-so-popular leader of the National Front political party over in France by the name of Jean-Marie Le Pen. And the ruling politicians have actually had to put in play almost all of the key components of Le Pen's ideology in order to react to the immigration and this social unrest that is occurring because of the immigrants there.
And because Le Pen wanted to do something about the illegal immigration, and he
right.
had pretty a fair amount of supporters. I remember he put in a very, very serious challenge to the ruling elite, which controls both political parties there. Le Pen came along and Le Pen said, we can't have this indefinitely. It's going to lead to explosive consequences and destroy France, and there were an awful lot of Frenchmen who agreed with him, weren't there?
It's true, which is quite surprising, because anyone who runs under the Nationalist Party over in Europe is instantly scorned, because it's seen as being in the same line as Hitler's party, and all of that is still very fresh in the minds of Europeans, of course. But the policies that Le Pen was in favor of were mostly in response to the immigration situation there, which was quite bothersome to a large number of concerned citizens there, and that was the principal platform whereupon he gained so much support from grassroots people. And some of the policies that he was hoping to, or that his platform was to implement, actually had to be implemented to stop these hoodlums from creating so much havoc. For instance, they had to implement the concept of zero tolerance for vandalism and crime. They had to really crack down on this and try to stop this the lenient attitudes that they had taken towards vandals in the past. Secondly, they had to impose curfews where many of these ill-contented people lived, so as to be able to arrest them on site with a valid reason, namely that they were breaking curfew at the time.
But the thing is, this is the logical way that you would handle unrest. This is what they did in Los Angeles. This is what is always done when you have this breakdown of law and order. The fact that they waited for 11 or 12 days, you could not have been that stupid unintentionally. I mean, the French are smart people. The people in government are smart. And I honestly think that they let this thing get out of hand, totally out of hand, because now they can start slap on a lot of very restrictive laws on not only on the demonstrators, but on the rest of the law-abiding French people. I think that they have the same mentality there that we have here in this country, and you let things get out of hand, and then, of course, you take away the freedom from everybody.
It's true. In fact, the part of Le Pen's platform that they haven't implemented thus far is his call to end immigration completely and to implement massive deportations back to the countries where the immigrants are migrating from. In reality, though, it's too late for that now, in our opinion. There's been too many years that have gone past. There are third and fourth generation African and Muslim immigrants in France now, and so you could stop the borders and really limit the amount of illegal immigration coming into a place like France, but it's a little late to try to send people back now. People are becoming part of the culture and difficult to send them out. If I could, I'd like to illustrate a little bit about why it is that immigration in this case has sort of run afoul and created so much discontent among the immigrants there. Because the lure of allowing immigration in is, of course, the desire for cheap labor. And cheap labor is rarely content to stay cheap for long. In fact, everyone wants to progress to better pay. Under a strict free market, or a laissez-faire, hands-off free market, people have the incentive to create something unique about themselves, because the only way that you can earn a greater wage is by being able to do something different than everyone else. Contrast this with a socialist economy, where people are taught in socialist public schools, etc., that everyone has equal privileges, everyone is created equal, everyone should be able to receive the exact same benefits to food, medical care, public benefits, etc. It destroys the free market incentives and creates envy and hate and strife among people who are all fighting to get the same piece of the productive pie for themselves and get it divvied up by means of legislation. And this creates hatred and envy among the poorest classes, especially, which is even exacerbated when there are differences in culture, such as in the case of immigration. So when there is massive immigration allowed inside of a socialist culture, it naturally creates an engine of violence that is quite easily fermented into these kinds of widespread riots that we are seeing in France.
But of course I believe that there certainly is unrest there, but somebody had to be coordinating this, certainly had to be. I believe that, of course, there are radical Islamists, I believe that there are communists there, and I believe that both groups are actually working together to foment this sort of thing. You could not have something this widespread without central coordination. And I think this is what nobody really wants to recognize, is that certainly there are those there who would exploit this situation to advance their own goal. And the ultimate goal is all power to the state. And even though, of course, the average individual, idealistic individual who sees the injustice, doesn't want to lose their freedom, they think that they're going to get more freedom. In reality, they're going to lose out. As time and time again we've seen throughout history, where you have these revolutionary movements, as they did with the French Revolution in 1789, and within a few years, why, they'd replaced one monarch with another monarch. They replaced the Louis the 18th with, of course, Napoleon Bonaparte, and he had himself declared king. And then they went from a democratic society back to kings, to democratic society back to kings. And France has been in turmoil ever since then.
That is a very good point, Pakistan, and I completely agree with you. Most of the news reports have tried to describe the violence in France as spontaneous. But in fact, I don't think that this is spontaneous. If this were truly spontaneous, it would be spontaneous all over the Western world. It's not difficult to fill a couple of beer bottles with some petrol and start a couple of cars on fire. And this level of immigration is all over Western Europe, and there's a large number of immigrants here in the United States. And if people think that the African Muslims in France are more violent than the criminals here in America and Britain, have quite another thing coming. It's just absolutely not true. But to point to some of the evidence that this isn't spontaneous, that there is actually some force behind this, instigating this, I think it's worth noting an interesting point that came up in the news recently. The Associated Press reported that French police found a gasoline bomb-making factory in an abandoned building in Évry, a southern Paris suburb. Inside of this factory, they found several hundred explosives, more than 100 bottles, several liters of fuel, and as well as hoods for hiding the rioters' faces. So it's not just kids in the bathrooms who are making these bombs. This is actually a coordinated effort between people. The question, of course, then is, well, who's coordinating it, and what is the motive behind it? And we think that there's a possible different sources of this. It's possible that this is actual legitimate local Muslim terrorism that is causing this. It's also possible that it's instigated by the Al-Qaeda-controlled operatives in Europe from the Anglo-American globalist side. I mean, there's of course a lot of anti-Iraq sentiment in France, and this kind of Muslim uprising could spur a different point of view among a lot of the French people. So I think that there are quite a few different reasons that there could be an instigating these attacks and coordinating them.
But don't forget that the communists are there. The communist leaders are totally behind that, just as they're reorganizing the anti-war movement here in the United States. But the only question is, who's funding communism? And nobody ever wants to ask that question. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief. So pick up the story there, Andrew.
All right. Well, we were talking about some of the possible reasons that these riots in France have been occurring, and who would be behind it, and what kind of motives they would have. I think that the third possible situation is actually from the French government itself, instigated by government agent provocateurs in order to generate a specific response from the public. We've seen a response in favor of government control and more restricted liberties from terrorist attacks before. It happened after 9/11 here in the United States. It happened after the bombings in Britain. It's probably
don't forget it happened after the Nazis were behind the bombing of the Reichstag in Hitler's Germany. It's a technique that's been used over and over again down through the ages. You create a situation, you foment the situation, you finance the situation, and then, of course, you use that situation to justify ever more control over the lives of the people.
That's right. So, and the government in France could have a couple of different motives for fomenting these things. They need or could need more restrictions on liberty. They could need more excuses to do more social spending and more social engineering. There's quite a few different possibilities here. Personally, I think that it's probably not as much from the French government itself. I have more of a tendency to think that this is a little bit more the first two reasons, either local Muslim terrorists coordinating this, or actually a push from the Anglo-American globalists to try to get France to tone down its anti-Iraq sentiments a bit.
If it was either one of those, why would the French wait 12 days to do what was logical? They should have done the first night. And if this were to happen in the United States tomorrow, they would have a curfew on within 24 hours, and they would have military troops in that area, you know, with their bayonets fixed. So, the government has to be in some way complicit with this. They're not stupid. Say what you will about the French. They're not stupid.
Yes. Actually, that's a very good point, Dr. Stan. Yeah, I think that's a very good point. But to compare this now with the situation here in America a bit further, we don't have as many of the Muslim African immigrants here, but what we do have is a great number of Latino revolutionaries here in America. The question arises, could something like this happen here? Well, there's an interesting article by Ernesto Cienfuegos, who is talking from Los Angeles. He's speaking from Voz de Atlan, so he's from this kind of a spokesperson of the Latinos in this area. He says that
hold that thought. We're going to have to bring our stations right on.
Very good. All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it was simply saying that though we do not have that many Muslims here in America, we do have an awful lot of Latinos, and he's quoting from an article that entitled The French Muslim Rebellion of 2005, subtitled Can a Similar Insurrection Occur in the United States? It's written by Ernesto Cienfuegos, who's from La Voz de Atlan. Now, La Voz de Atlan is a Mexican nationalist organization centered here in the United States, dedicated to, of course, taking over the five western states. The whole idea of Aslan is that the United States stole California and New Mexico and Arizona and Texas and one other state from the Mexicans, and they're going to take them back again. That's what Aslan's all about. So this man is writing from the far left point of view, and why don't you sort of pick up with that idea? I thought it was a very significant article. I picked it off of your website. So tell, what did Ernesto say?
Ernesto is talking specifically about the city of Los Angeles, but I believe that the rumblings that he's talking about in that city from the large population of legal and illegal immigrants from Latin American cultures is significant enough to be noted in all of the southern states, as well as the country as a whole. He says that there's a growing number of rumblings in the high school, especially he notes a specific incident in the Los Angeles Unified School District, which is the second largest in the USA. He says that a few days ago, back when this was written, he said thousands of students, predominantly of Mexican descent, simply walked out of their schools to protest overcrowding, lack of techs, lack of best and unqualified teachers. And he says that he feels that in Los Angeles, there's something that is sinister that is about to happen. Kind of sounds like a hint from his part that it's...
Let me just read briefly what he said. Today, here in Los Angeles, we are already seeing ominous signs of an impending social explosion that will make the French rebellion by Muslims and immigrant youth seem tame by comparison. All the ingredients are present, including a hostile and racist police, as in France. In fact, we came close to having a major riot in three separate occasions just this year alone. Now, this is a gentleman, a Mexican nationalist, who dedicated to the destruction of our country, writing here on our internet, talking about how we see the ominous signs already in Los Angeles. I thought that was a fascinating article.
I agree. He comments that all it would take for a, quote, bird brain cop to do something stupid and everything would break loose. He also thinks that a major rebellion in L.A. would quickly spread throughout the country as quickly as it spread throughout France.
Well, of course, we have about at least somewhere between 12 and 20 million illegal immigrants in this country who believe that this country belongs to them, it's been stolen from them, and they're going to take it back from the gringos. And a lot of them really feel this way. A lot of them are just here wanting to get a job and send money back to their families. But they're the agitators there, the professional agitators. And remember who is funding them. They're being funded by the Ford Foundation. Who funded the communist movement in the United States all during the 30s and 40s and 50s? The same Ford Foundation. Why? Because they want social unrest. They want, of course, to destroy our country and to establish a corporate-controlled dictatorship here. That's always been the goal of the Ford Foundation. And if you doubt that, you need to get the Reese Committee report, and the complete text is up on Charlotte Isabey's website, but we have the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, much more readable, written in 1958. We've kept the book in print because, well, it's been actively suppressed for so many years. I talked to the original publisher, Devin Grady, I think was his name, Devin Garrett, and he told me he couldn't get the book distributed, and I ended up with it plates, and we've reprinted it. We carry the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, one of the five most important books out of the tens of thousands of books in my library, one of the five most important books we have. Foundations, Their Power and Influence, why? Because it talks about how the Ford Foundation funded the communist movement here in the 30s and 40s and 50s, just as they're funding the illegal immigrants today in preparation for the revolution. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's just exactly that revolution that is the reason why they have been encouraging immigration in the past. There's a bill out to push for amnesty now for illegal Mexicans, and they're trying to allot 350,000 more H-1B visas for workers in the U.S. So I don't think this problem is going to get any better before it gets a lot worse.
And the thing is that in the end, the Mexicans will lose out. They're simply cannon fodder for the revolution. What will the end result be? by the loss of all freedom for everyone. That's what it's all about. Well, this is Archie Stan. Our guest this evening is Andrew Scouse. We're talking about what's going on in Europe today, in France, and then quoting from an article that appears on the World Affairs Brief website, and talking written by a gentleman, a Mexican nationalist from Los Angeles, talking about how the same thing could break loose in Los Angeles at any time. I thought that was a very, very ominous statement that he made.
And I think it's a very easy possibility. It's been the opinion of the World Affairs Brief for quite a long time now that it's very strange that we haven't had any small-scale terrorist attacks since 9/11. If you look at what's been happening in France, it would be all too easy to incite the same kinds of revolutionaries here in the States. Anyone who lives in Texas or Southern California or New Mexico knows how easy it would be to incite some of the Latino revolutionaries in the major cities to start doing exactly the same kinds of things of torching cars and spreading fire and destruction throughout the inner cities of all of these major southwestern towns. And this thing could spread quite rapidly throughout here. The question is, will it happen soon? I think that with this push for amnesty for illegals and growing push by President Bush to allow more and more people into the country, that they will try to stem this kind of reaction of riots here, at least for a time. I think that it will come, but not until after they're done bringing people in, until it's too late to try to shut down the border. President Bush in a recent rally for Hispanic support, I'm sorry, not recent, back in 2001, said, quote, "That is why it is so important for us to tear down barriers and walls that might separate Mexico from the United States." And what's most interesting about this whole policy of encouraging immigration is that through all strata of the American voters, the one thing that is common through both Democrats and Republicans is that people want to reduce immigration. And yet, the leaders who are supposedly open and just subservient to the human will, to what the voters want, are all pushing against what the voters want.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andrew is simply pointing out that whether it be Democrats or Republicans, on both sides of the political spectrum, everybody's concerned about the unbridled immigration. But you have to understand that the elite who control our government are encouraging the violation of our laws, bringing the people in from other countries illegally, and of course giving them welfare and letting them buy houses and giving them free medical care and free education for their children. We are acting as a magnet intentionally to do this, despite the fact that people don't want it. But you see, the elite don't care what the people want. They have an agenda. And they really, of course, want to do away with our borders. They want, of course, to unite the whole of the Northern Hemisphere into one unit with a common currency and a common government. And then we can guard the southern border of Mexico. It's much easier, shorter to guard. And then, of course, to unite all of the Northern Hemisphere, including Central America with America, because our leaders have no loyalty to this country. Their loyalty, although they can't admit it to the American people, is to this globalist Luciferian dream of a new world order and a new world religion. Well, before we go on, Andrew, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the World Affairs Brief, get a copy of the World Affairs Brief, access your information, and start getting the information that Rush Limbaugh won't tell them.
Certainly. I think the best source is for people to log on to the internet and visit our website at www.worldaffairsbrief.com. There they can find the same articles that we pull from to write the brief with. We have researchers who comb the web and find the most important news articles from all across the net so that we can fill in between the gaps of what the major news sources are reporting. And then to actually get a copy of the World Affairs Brief, which helps to boil down the most essential portions of the news and provide commentary about it and try to track where everything is going, they can sign up for it on the website or call for or call toll free area code 877-518-5888 and they can order by phone a printed copy of it to be sent to them in the mail, all free of charge.
I'll give that telephone number one more time.
Yes. So to get a free copy of the brief, they can dial toll free 877-518-5888.
All right, fine.
Great. All right. Well, just as a closing thought to this idea about immigration and the anti-American sentiment that is felt by much of the Latino community who doesn't integrate themselves into our culture, I'd actually like to put this in perspective with a comment on the recent Mar del Plata summit that President Bush attended down in Argentina. As we mentioned, my father Joel Skousen has been traveling around and he was actually close to this area when this was occurring, and he has some interesting points of view to talk about this. Most of the time that the president of the United States goes down to a South American country, he's usually quite sought after to be on in interviews and to have photo shoots with important people. This time, however, it was markedly different. There was, of course, cordial words and several handshaking ceremonies that went on, but overall he was avoided and shunned by many. To put this in perspective, you have to realize that in South America, to be a friend of George W. Bush is dangerous to one's political career. The Argentine summit this year was marred by major protests, many of which turned violent. American banks had windows smashed. There was large groups of people that tore into shops and businesses that have American icons on them, like McDonald's particularly. And yet what was interesting about this, my father says, is that there was a large number of media cameramen that would follow these vandals around town. And he says, I couldn't help but be struck by the obvious. Where were the police? He says that in this particular resort town of Mar del Plata, there's a huge police and military presence. It's kind of a swank resort town. And at the demand of the U.S. government, they had cordoned off huge sections of the town that nobody was allowed to pass through. Even local residents had to present passes to be able to get through these roadblocks of certain portions of the town. And so, of course, the vandals went elsewhere and still found many American-type businesses to attack and to vandalize. And yet, it seems strange that the police couldn't have shadowed or followed these large groups of people who were obviously looking for trouble and perhaps intervene. It seems like Argentina was trying to create the impression that there was a great amount of animosity among their people towards Bush. My father says that there was everywhere signs reading Fuera Bush, which means get out Bush, all across the country of Argentina.
I mean, and this is so similar to what happened up in Seattle when we had the Battle of Seattle here a few years ago, and the police were prevented from trying to stop the lawlessness that occurred until it got completely out of hand. And the same thing happened after the Rodney King riots. There was no reason for them. The police were told to stand down and let them get out of hand, and then after you had chaos, then they were allowed to come in with their helmets and their masks and their SWAT uniforms looking like Darth Vader. But the police could have stopped the whole thing. They would not allow it. Obviously, they would not allow the police to do what they should have done in Argentina. Is that your impression?
It is. And I think that the overall purpose of it was to sort of galvanize the antagonism against the United States and show that the country as a whole is all united in their opposition towards this American president.
But I think, you know, the thing is the fact that we're moving military operations into Paraguay. We're threatening, you know, to invade either Colombia and Venezuela or both of them. The increased military presence in South America is antagonizing most of the people down there, isn't it?
That's right. And it's being used by many of the leaders to get support of their activities. Hugo Chavez was actually leading the opposition rally at the summit, and Chavez is of course Venezuela's communist president, and he was there with his normal fiery rhetoric. He actually stole primetime television coverage of even the speeches by national leaders at the summit, with his fiery speech, which shows what the general local media was trying to portray with the summit when they focused on him instead of their own leaders who were attending the summit and giving speeches.
And so Chavez is really being built up by the media as the sort of the successor to Fidel Castro, the communist leader who threatens the United States. And this is really very, very convincing. It's a great scam, because whose side do you want to be on? Cesar Chavez, the communist, or George Bush, who's, of course, doing everything he can to antagonize the people of the world and obviously is preparing military action to take in South America? And the truth of the matter is, you don't want to be on either side. Cesar Chavez would not be in power when the people of Venezuela rose up here about 2 or 3 years ago and threw him out of office. The American government immediately recognized the revolution and the new anti-communist government. And what did our government do? Absolutely nothing. They let Chavez go back to power. Obviously, he's a scam, just exactly like Fidel Castro is, one of the finest enemies that money could buy. But can't the American people find it difficult to believe that we would create enemies or allow our enemies to gain positions of power? And yet, of course, well, most people don't know that David Rockefeller's two daughters, if you read David Rockefeller's memoirs, he has two daughters. They're both dedicated Marxists, both dedicated supporters of Fidel Castro, both go down to Cuba to support Fidel Castro. Why would the daughters of the richest man in the United States be supporting Fidel Castro? Gee, I wonder why that is.
That's right.
Of course, yeah. Fidel Castro is such a good friend of Hugo Chavez. So, you know, nothing is as it appears to be. Everything is an illusion. Everything is delusion. So, but it certainly sounds like things that were very difficult down there. What else did your dad tell you about what was going on there when George Bush was down at the meeting?
Well, he says that Bush actually left the summit early once it became obvious that they weren't going to be able to reach any kind of positive conclusion there or have an agreement to sign. I mean, what good is a figurehead, he says, if the image is just to breed hate and there aren't any glorious papers to sign?
Well, now, of course, he's pushing for the free trade zone of the Americas, isn't he, the FTAA?
That's right. Bush was principally there to try to encourage the faltering FTAA talk. And the free trade area of the America talks is actually not really about free trade. It's only about free trade for certain specific big insider corporations that have insider dealings, and these are the only ones that will get any advantage. And any advantage of that is mostly one way. most of the other South American countries have learned this through experience, and so consequently, there's a lot of justifiable criticism of FTAA and the previous agreements like NAFTA.
But of course, I think the one fear of the people of South America is with our military now beginning to center in Paraguay and increasing the number of military forces there, that we will use our military to replace the leaders who oppose FTAA and then impose our will on the helpless people of this country as we move towards the uniting of the Western Hemisphere and then the New World Order. So our military then is used to force people out of office, duly elected representatives of the people, force them out of office to install people who go along with our agenda.
That's right, and it's not an agenda of freedom as the American people are led to believe. It's an agenda of unification under a global strategy, which is not free.
And if the most absurd things, we saw the elections in Iraq. Nobody was allowed to know who the political candidates were several months ago until 2 days before the election. What sort of election is that if you don't know who's running until 2 days beforehand? And the excuse was, well, if we put their names out, they might be assassinated. Nobody was allowed to read the Constitution they voted on within the last few weeks. Of course, because they kept changing it right up at the very end. So nobody read the Constitution, but everybody voted on it. What sort of representative government is this? Or is this a sham to make the American people think that we're really trying to produce representative government and democracy in Iraq? But, of course, democracy, according to Plato, always degenerates into despotism. You can read what he wrote 2,500 years ago in Bartlett's quotation. Democracy always degenerates into despotism, and that's what we're trying to impose in Iraq and Afghanistan, and throughout the world.
That's true. In fact, while we're on the subject of Iraq, I'd like to bring up an interesting person who has come back into the limelight recently. Ahmad Chalabi was of course, a fairly talked-about name at the beginning of the Iraq War. He was originally set up by the CIA to run the Exile Front, the Iraqi National Congress, and he was. It seemed like he was kind of the pet American boy there, and consequently, of course, once the Americans came to power, and that became not a popular thing. It's interesting what happened then. The U.S. actually turned on Chalabi and set him up for arrest. During previous World Affairs brief, it's been talked about how this was a fraud, and the U.S. was actually trying to make him appear on bad terms with the U.S. in order to allow him to be accepted into the new Iraqi government as not being a crony of the U.S.
And that was the greatest scam of all time. Yeah. They went into his house, they seized all of his papers. Suddenly, this man who'd been working with the CIA for all this time, suddenly, why we're thinking of indicting him for giving secrets to Iran, it was all a scam to make him acceptable to the Iraqi people. And the Iraqi people bought it. This is the way they manipulate people. Oh, the American's got to be against him. He's got to be a good guy. We can trust him. And I would like to suggest he's never been a good guy. In fact, there's a warrant out for his arrest in Jordan for stealing $300 million there.
And that's probably the least of his crimes.
Right.
What happened after that is Chalabi made a deal with the new Shiite leadership and has since come up with a miraculous post as Deputy Prime Minister of Iraq.
In other words, if a CIA operative is now the Deputy Prime Minister of Iraq, this is what's known as democracy.
That's right. The Guardian noted something interesting yesterday. It said that, quote, Chalabi, selected by Iraqis to be a deputy minister despite previous U.S. hostility, had a half-hour meeting recently with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, though no press cameras were allowed to record the event. And in the coming days, he will be meeting with Vice President Dick Cheney and National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley as well. If anybody has any doubts that this person is on bad terms with the U.S., they should put those in contrast, because nobody meets with all of these high-level people, including Dick Cheney, who we believe is high up in the cabal of the American globalist group, without being in on the deal. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with Shalabi and how this whole thing plays out. It seems like he's being set up to be the perfect American lackey out there in Iraq.
And, of course, to lead the Iraqi people exactly the way that the CIA wants it to go. And what people don't understand, this whole thing is a CIA operation. The CIA is always there working behind the scenes with their special mercenary units. They were the ones who inhabit Grave Prison, telling the guards to torture the people. They're working behind the scenes there in Afghanistan. They're directing so much of what's going on. And the average American has no idea. Of course, they did the same thing in Vietnam. And what we're seeing in Iraq today is Vietnam all over again. It's like, what was that old saying of Yogi Berra's? It's like deja vu all over again. We'll be back in just a moment with Andrew Skousen to wrap up this program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, go ahead, Andrew. You got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right. Well, maybe I can just touch on a couple of the smaller stories that are coming out in this week's World Affairs Brief. One of these is about the report of using white phosphorus munitions in Fallujah. Previously, the U.S. had reported amid international charges that the U.S. had used white phosphorus and other burning munitions against civilians in Iraq. The U.S. had issued multiple denials about this. And yet they failed to keep things straight among all of the military publications. The March edition of Field Artillery magazine read, quote, "The fight for Fallujah, white phosphorus rounds proved to be an effective and versatile munition. We used it for screening missions at two breaches, and later in the fight as a potent psychological weapon against the insurgents in trench lines and spider holes when we could not get effects on them with high explosives."
In other words, just burn them to death.
That's right. This white phosphorus round spreads this chemical agent that basically bursts into flames on its own. It's such a strong reaction with just air and oxygen.
But isn't that an illegal munition of some sort? Isn't that in violation of all the rules of war?
I'm not sure about that point. But it was definitely something that they were trying to cover up. And
so they've been lying to the people, they've been lying to everybody, that they've been using this terrible thing, because a lot of people, there were almost a third of the population of Fallujah was still there when we attacked. So it must have killed a lot of civilians as well, didn't it?
As the killing it directly, I'm sure it did happen, but the worst effect of white phosphorus bombs is that many civilians suffered horrible burns, even under the clothing, from the burning phosphorus dust that comes out of these things.
And this is really quite a recent story. In fact, it was an Italian news team, television team, that got a lot of the footage and published it here recently.
That's right. And so it's starting to break down the official line about not using these.
But if they lie to us about that, what else would they lie to us about?
That's right. And what's most amazing is that the official line is the only one that really gets carried here in the States, and yet all across the rest of the world, these images are being shown to all of the rest of the worldwide population, and people can't believe what we Americans are thinking to allow our military to perform these kinds of acts and get away with it.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Andrew. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andrew is simply talking about how we're using the white phosphorus over there that's been admitted in certainly the military journals, and of course the source of the documentation, not only in a documentary that's been shown on Italian television all throughout the world. But even, of course, certainly apparently in some of our own publications, the tragedy is that our government is lying to us about it. But the rest of the world is becoming furious with America. America is the bully. They're burning civilians to death with white phosphorus in violation, in my estimation, of all international laws and treaties in a war without any justification. And we got into it on the basis of a lie. Andrew, we're out of time. God bless you. One parting thought for our listeners before I let you go?
It's that we need to, we have a responsibility as Americans to do our own research and not trust the official line, to be able to understand exactly what's going on and to see what the rest of the world sees about Americans.
And remember, men and women become accomplices of the evils they fail to oppose. And what is it was Dottie said in his classic book, The Inferno, that the hottest place is in hell, who reserved for those who in a time of moral crisis try to maintain a position of neutrality. And in the evil that is taking place today, there is no position of neutrality. Andrew, thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you again real soon.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Good night and God bless. All right, well, that was Andrew Skousen, and I hope you enjoyed the discussion. I always enjoy going over the items that are covered in World Affairs Brief, and I will tell you that the first thing I do in the morning after I check my emails is go through World Affairs Brief, and you should as well if you really want to know what's going on, because you're not going to get it off of the controlled media here in America. And, of course, I hope that's the reason you listen to our programs, is because you're going to hear the information that is not available elsewhere. Well, this is the time when we certainly want to mention for our last time here on Radio Liberty that tomorrow, pardon me, that tomorrow is the last day, that certainly by noon tomorrow we need to know if you're going to be coming to our all-day conference, going to be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course in the Monterey Bay area on the 19th of November. And, of course, if you're hearing this as a delayed program, it won't be able to, but if you're hearing this tonight, why, the 19th of November is just a week from tomorrow. Going to be a great conference. We're bringing in outside speakers, and well, we hope you can come. We have to have reservations because we're offering lunch, so give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down our newsletters, and you'll get an awful lot of education. Go to our internet site. You can listen to our programs live 5 hours a day. Or you can go to our archives and get the information, and you'll hear some of the most exciting speakers that, well, that are out there on the in the circuit, and you'll get insight into what's going on, not only what's going on factually, but what's going on spiritually, because we're involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And unless you understand what motivates the people on the other side, in many instances, is not philosophy, but a spiritual reality. These people, of course, worship a different God. And there are certain people in key position who've literally gone over to the dark side. So until tomorrow, we ask you to pray for America and to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, may the Lord be with you.